This is Carmen DeFalco on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Thanks for listening to the Carmen and Yurko podcast, presented by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
Get Carmen and Yurko podcasts on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
I'd like you to meet a real inspiration.
Carmen and Yurko, ESPN 1000.
All right. Hope everyone's enjoying their Friday. The rain has thankfully stopped. For now, Tracy Butler said, I think it's done for the day, but we might get more this weekend. So plan accordingly. Planning, that's what everybody's doing. How the sports league is going to get back slowly but surely. We're starting to see it. It's going to be happening in Europe more this weekend with the Bundesliga coming back. We've got NASCAR, as we were just talking about with Mike North. Golf, they're working on baseball. Football has been pressing on, which I think is good. I agree with something that Greeny said this morning on Get Up, that we're not one to throw many compliments Roger Goodell's way, Yurko. But I think the NFL has done a pretty nice job, even in the face of what we both thought was some unwarranted criticism back when they started free agency. I think the NFL's done kind of a nice job of understanding their situation. They had a little bit of an advantage being out of their season, saying, right, let's conduct our business and let's continue to work towards creative plans to figure out how to have a season without a hitch. And that's kind of what they've done. I can't believe it, but I think we do have to give Roger Goodell a little credit.
Well, it's the benefit of time. I give timing the benefit the most. So 52% goes to timing. Okay, that's the way it works. A month after the Super Bowl is completed, in your downtime, all of a sudden this thing strikes. And all of a sudden decisions have to be made. Okay? Those that didn't have to be made a month before, they didn't have to be made before you had the Super Bowl. In their downtime, the decision has to get made. So what did the NFL do? Said, well, listen, we're still going to do free agency because we can. We don't need everybody everywhere for free agency, and a lot of the people have been doing the work since the end of the Super Bowl. And your pro personnel guys are doing the work all year anyway, anticipating who the free agents might be. Okay, and then the draft comes along. Again, Major League Baseball, screwed because of the timing.
Yeah.
Hockey, screwed. Soccer, screwed. Basketball, screwed. Everybody, screwed. Carmen, we didn't have an NCAA National Championship tournament this year.
Talk about screwed.
The dance of all dances we didn't have. You want to talk about poor timing, I feel sorry for everybody. So as much credit as we want to go ahead and throw at the feet of Roger Goodell, thank heavens for the timing for the NFL, which is the only reason they could go about the business of doing what they did the way they did. Now, all credit in the world goes to football. Why? Because they chose to persevere. They chose to grasp the American spirit and find a way to get things done. In the face of adversity, you adjust. You adapt, you overcome, and that's what the NFL was able to do. So if we want to lay the credit at the feet of Roger Goodell or at the feet of the owners or at the feet of any and everybody who wanted to continue on, that's what we're going to do. At least that's what I'm going to do. You want to give bouquets to Roger Goodell? You feel free. I'll give it to the whole NFL.
Maybe one rose, not like a full bouquet.
Not getting a bouquet from the good kid.
Rob Manfred was on CNN last night in about 15 minutes or so, maybe about 12 minutes. We're going to play some of that as he was talking to Anderson Cooper about what baseball's rollout might look like. We feel some of that's important, so we'll play some of the Rob Manfred sound. Chris Black, our sound guy, did a great job putting together this montage, so sit back and enjoy and get ready for the final two episodes of The Last Dance. Here's a collection of the great MJ moments and stories from episodes 1 through 8.
After the fifth championship, which was 96-97, we were looking at this team and we realized, other than Michael, the rest of the guys were probably at the end of their high productive years. We had to decide whether we keep the team together or not. And we realized maybe this was the time to do a rebuild and not try to win a sixth championship.
I just kept hearing this over and over again, and I was just getting irritated, like, we were winning.
Jerry Krause, the Bulls general manager, says, quote, organizations win titles, not players, end quote. Funny thing, I've never seen him post up and hit a short jump shot.
This quote that was attributed to you?
Well, as you know, David, it was a misquote. What I said was that players and coaches alone don't win championships, that organizations do. I do sincerely believe that organizations as a whole win. One part of it can't win alone. The guy left the word alone out of there.
Right.
And he admitted later on, oh, yeah, I left the word out. Well, you dumb s***. That's what you kill the quota.
It sounded like he was making a very specific point to a very specific person.
We know the team is much bigger than the 15 players. Those guys who work in the front office, they were good people. But the most important part of the process is the players. So for him to say that is offensive to the way that I approach the game.
Jordan, he's the best athlete. He's one of the best competitors. He's one of the most skilled players. And that, to me, makes him the best basketball player that I've ever seen play.
Michael played every game as if it was last. Every single game. There was never a day off. He knew that there was going to be somebody in that crowd that never saw him play before. That's what kept him going. It wasn't like, oh, I went to see this guy play and he only got 12 points. It didn't happen.
My innate personality is to win at all costs. If I have to do it myself, I'm going to do it. Every time I step on that basketball court, my focus is to win a game. It drives me insane when I can't. As you get older, you look back and you understand how you became the person you are. I don't think I would be here without the lessons that I learned at a very young age. That competitiveness within me started when I was a kid.
Michael put on a show.
Our Miller Lite most valuable player of the game is Michael Jordan with an all-time record 63 points in a single playoff game.
We ended up winning the series, but it was an incredible, incredible playoff performance. I've never seen it before, and I had never seen it after. That wasn't Michael Jordan out there. It was God disguised as Michael Jordan.
Up to that time, the franchise, the history of the Bulls was blowing leads. And you're like, oh, my God, this is going to happen again. They're going to do this. They're going to blow this. They're going to lose this series to Cleveland.
So game's about to start, and there was two other beat writers. Beat writer from the Sun-Times, Lacey Banks, and Kent McDill from the Herald, and me. And Lacey's picked Cavs to sweep in three. Kent's picked the Cavs to win in four, and I've picked the Cavs to win in five. So, Michael, the game's just about to start. And Michael walks over to Lacey, and he points to her and says, we took care of you. Then he looks at Kent, and he says, we took care of you. And he looks at me, and we take care of you today.
They were two-time champions, but, you know, there certainly has to be some respect.
Straight up bitches. That's what they walked off like. Now, we just kick your ass. Go ahead and go.
During that period of time, that's just not how it was passed. When you lost, you left the floor. How's it?
This is Isaiah talking about the walk-off.
Well, I know it's all whatever he says now, you know it wasn't his true actions then. You know, it's time enough to think about it. Or the reaction of the public that's kind of changed his perspective of it. Yeah, you can show me anything you want. There's no way you can convince me he would.
Knowing what we know now and the aftermath of what took place, but during that period of time, that's just not how it was passed. Just wasn't. And you can go back and you can look at any of those old games or whatever. When you lost, you left the floor.
All you got to do is you go back to us losing in game seven. I shook everybody's hand. 2 years in a row, we shook their hands when they beat us. There was a certain respect to the game that we paid to them. That's sportsmanship. No matter how much it hurts, and believe me, it hurt, but they didn't have to shake our hands. We knew we whipped their ass already. We gotten past them. And that was the most, that was better than, you know, in some ways winning a championship.
After the season, usually there's a time period where Michael takes some time off. The night they lost Orlando, I said, Michael, you know, I'm about to get out of here. Let me know when you want me to see you, because I'll see you tomorrow. Michael had an obligation to himself, the fans, his teammates, the organization, his family, everybody. He said, if you're going to sit down and take 3 hours out of your day to watch me on TV, I have an obligation to give you my best. To give you my best all the time.
You're a fan saying, hey, Kobe, you beat Michael one-on-one. I feel like, yo, what you get from me is from him. I don't get 5 championships here without him, because he guided me so much and gave me so much great advice.
Was he a nice guy?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, winning has a price. And leadership has a price. So I pulled people along when they didn't want to be pulled. I challenge people when they don't want to be challenged. And I earned that right because my teammates came after me. They didn't endure all the things that I endured.
Michael Jordan is down in pain.
Once you join the team, you live at a certain standard that I played the game. And I wasn't going to take anything less. Now, that means I had to go in there and get in your ass a little bit. And I did that.
You asked all my teammates. The one thing about Michael Jordan was he never asked me to do something that he didn't do.
This and they're gonna say, well, he wasn't really a nice guy, he may have been a tyrant. Oh, well, that's you, because you never won anything. I wanted to win, but I wanted them to win and be a part of that as well. Do this. I'm only doing it because it is who I am. That's how I played the game. That was my mentality. If you don't want to play that way, don't play that way. Break.
Said this on Monday. Still probably my favorite part of any episode so far. I thought that that was the most poignant part of everything we've seen so far. The end of that would have been the end of episode 7, what Chris Black just finished that great montage with, because I think that was Michael in his truest form as we've seen him in this documentary. And it gives you really an inside look of the way he thinks. He doesn't really care. Was he a tyrant? Yes. Was he a bully? Absolutely. There's no debating that. Did he feel like it was serving a purpose? He did. And that's the way he was to his teammates and the people around him. And if he didn't like it, too bad. But I guess that's why Michael made it to 6 finals and won all 6. Even when he was exhausted, six mentally and emotionally, right? And physically, Yurk, yeah, 6-0. Somehow, he just kept finding a way to make sure that they weren't going to lose. And that's, I think, the realest part of this whole thing. Is when he says, yeah, was I a jerk? Do I worry about the way people are going to perceive me? I don't know that it really matters. This is the way I did it. I pushed guys. I pushed myself. If you didn't like it, too bad. So I thought that was incredibly powerful.
Not 4-5 in finals.
No, 6-0.
No, 6-0,
in finals. When we come back next, Rob Manfred, the commissioner, talks about testing, baseball coming back, and the feud between the owners and the players over money. And then Tom Ricketts was also talking about money, and is he overinflating what they make at the gate just to put some more of this back on the players? We'll discuss all that coming up next.
It's Carmen and Yurko. Follow us on the gram at Carmen and Yurko and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
If you ever miss an interview, check out the ESPN Chicago app. Make sure you download that, catch up on all the shows, get the interviews. And someone was asking on Twitter yesterday, hey, where do I find this new golf club podcast that you guys started?
It's there.
Got to get it on the ESPN Chicago app, so make sure you download it. Yurko did the first week. Waddle did this week. I'm going to be doing next week's golf club, and I think we're going to spend some time chatting with our friend Vince Pellegrino from the WGA. They're supposed to play the BMW, obviously, later this year at a beautiful Olympia Fields. Has that been moved back, Merck, or is that's not August anymore? Did they move that to September?
I think it's still in August.
I think it's the final week in August.
Okay, yeah, we'll talk to Vince about that stuff next week, so that'll be up on the newest pod next week.
Do you want to know what some of the initial information coming out of there is?
Sure.
There'll be no fans.
Well, yeah, I think that's probably the way they're going to have to go about this.
In the PGA plan, because they're starting up in June, they say there is a chance for fans at the John Deere, which is in July. So maybe that changes.
Silvis, Illinois?
It is, yeah. Right.
Different county, guys.
Right, Good point. Exactly.
Different county, gentlemen. Remember, they've lumped this thing in all together. I think Olympia Fields, if I'm not mistaken, I'm trying to remember
saying that's Cook County.
That's Cook,
right?
Yeah. Cook or is it Will?
I think it's Cook. Yeah.
I think it's Cook still, York.
Because I grew up in Cook County in Flossmore, so I think Flossmore, Olympia Fields.
Oh, yeah, you're Cook County then, yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's still Cook County.
Yeah, right, we'll see. Who's coming over last?
Cook County. Well, we'll talk to Vince about all that stuff next week. So check out, I know some people have been looking, ESPN Chicago app, you need it. Catch up on all the shows, all the interviews, and the golf club podcast.
Real quick update, Tommy Waddle checked in.
Yeah.
Rough front nine, 44 with three doubles, but rallied on the back and shot a 40, so an 84 for a while.
My whole life is a double bogey.
So he's gone 78-84.
Right. And what's he getting, another 18 in today? I love that guy. Look at him just go.
Here's Rob Manfred, the commissioner of baseball, last night on CNN talking about the questions of testing and what it's going to be like for MLB if they come back and play a season.
Someone does test positive for the virus during the season, then how do you handle that? Does everyone that the person's been in contact with then have to go into quarantine for 14 days?
Our experts are advising us that we don't need a 14-day quarantine. What we will do is the positive individual will be removed from the rest of the group. There will be a quarantine arrangement in each facility and in each city, and then we'll do contact tracing for the individuals that we believe there was contact with, and we will do point-of-care testing for those individuals to minimize the likelihood that there's been a spread.
I guess the challenge, right, Commissioner, is then if you're trying to avoid a cluster of people becoming positive, that's what you're describing. But what if you do start to see more than one player or a few players, if they're still playing despite having been exposed to someone who has this, doesn't that carry significant risk?
Well, again, nothing is risk-free. In this undertaking, we're trying to mitigate that risk with the repeated point of care testing to make sure that people who have had contact have not been exposed. And by obviously removing those individuals that have a positive test, they will be quarantined until they have two negative tests over a 24-hour period.
So it's not going to be a whole team quarantine. It'll be that player, and they'll start that contact testing right away. As we've said, what they can't afford to have happen, York, is to start just automatically shutting it down again. Somebody's going to test positive again in the fall. An athlete, a pro athlete, is going to test positive. Let's face it. Well, you can't shut it down again.
Yeah,
odds are what they're getting at.
Odds are that's going to happen.
Correct.
Yes.
And that's what they're hinting at, and that's what all these leagues are. As they put their protocols in place, they're going to tell you, no, if someone tests positive, we're not shutting down the way everything did when Rudy Gobert tested positive that night. That's not going to happen again.
There's no shutting it down, baby.
There is not going to be any shutting it down.
I told you, Carm, once it opens up, it's never shutting down again.
I sure hope not. I don't see how it can.
Might be why you see some reluctance of some people wanting to open up.
It could very well be, Yerk. because I don't know how we get going again for a few months and just shut it down again. And that's got nothing to do with politics or anything else. That would be devastating. It's devastating enough as it is. And to say everything's going to be shut down again for 3 months or 2 months even, or a matter of weeks in the fall, is it would be, you know, let's face it, it'd be demoralizing. It'd be devastating. And I just can't see them doing that. And that's why they're going to do whatever they can and spend their great resources, I would imagine, in making sure that they do get a lot of testing. I guess that's a whole other side of this debate, too, is it fair that a country that seems to be struggling with testing is going to have all these tests available for these players? Well, these leagues are, I mean, I don't know if I'm totally brushed up on all this. Leagues are going to conduct this right. their own, right? MLB's got a lab that's going to do this for them in Utah. I'm assuming they're covering all that, right? Or is that a silly assumption?
No, that wouldn't be a silly assumption. That's cost of doing business.
That's what I'm thinking, right?
Right. That's the cost of doing business. It goes onto the expense side.
Yeah.
This is just another expense. This is what it's going to cost us on that side of the ledger.
Yeah, I was reading that's part of their plan.
You know, and the NFL's got an extended amount of time to try to figure it out. And, you know, everybody's making PPE or whoever's making masks, whoever's making tests. You've got all these companies, Carm, that are in a race trying to find, you know, a vaccine or whatever it is, something to offset the effects of corona. So, I mean, everybody's going about the business of, okay, let's be the ones that end up finding this. Of course, now there's more profiteering than there ever is. There's a reason you're doing this. It's because you want to find it and you want to make the money off of it. There's no Jonas Salk in the business anymore, Carm. That's gone. You know, doing something for
the good of the people.
Good of the people. That's gone. It's there for the profit of the individual.
Let me ask you a question, because when I listen to Manfred say that, it sounds like to me, okay, so the federal government is trying to get tests for everybody, right?
Right, yes.
But there are individual states and individual governors who have gone out and secured their own tests, right? Yeah. So, like, it sounds like to me, like, Major League Baseball is like a state that is going out on their own to secure their own tests.
Right. And like Yurka said, that goes down in your cost of expense. That's
right.
An expense.
So, like, technically, because I know there is some outrage, it's like athletes taking tests from people who need it. Technically, it's not taking it from people who need it, because they're going and getting their own secured. Does that make sense?
It does.
Or is my mind just
that someone would counter that and say, well, the noble thing would be for them to give them to people that are in more desperate need of those. But they are still operating a business here.
Guys, at this point in time, who's in desperate need?
I don't know.
I mean, we're 2 months past, you know, where we thought, you know, everything was going to be absolutely chaotic. That level of chaos never came to fruition.
You know, yeah, I mean, McCormick, outside of New York, probably not as much. And McCormick Place never
McCormick
had to be used,
place
right?
Was never full.
Four beds, I think, or something,
six.
Wasn't it? Six beds.
Five of them on the day they had the press conference there.
Convenient.
Had to have somebody there, guys.
Pretty convenient.
Can't have a press conference without some people in
the
there.
A bunch of empty beds.
Okay. Six total. So they end up assembling that at a cost of what? Doesn't matter. I'm not playing a political game. They're disassembling that now, right? You had both ships go out, one to the West Coast, one to the East Coast, used minimally.
Ships, right?
I did, used minimally. So, you know, there have been a lot of things. So you address everybody panicked, wanted 40,000 ventilators in New York. They were never utilized. Nothing was utilized to the level that everybody thought that was going to be utilized at.
Okay? But people still can't get tests, though. That is true, isn't it?
But who is pressed into absolutely having to have a test?
Yeah, that
is it truly the sick? And if it's truly the sick, then I think that the amount of tests for the sick are there. It's the multiple tests. If you've got to test somebody every single day,
right,
or give them an antibody test every single day, you got 320 million people in the United States, Carm.
Yeah.
How are you going to come up with 320 million tests a day? Nobody is. Nobody can.
No.
And I don't even think they're asking for that, but I've taken my example to the nth degree. I think the point is, who needs tests now? Now they're testing just to find out the numbers and to find out if you've had it, if you didn't have it, you know, the antibodies, if you've got it, you know, are you, which I don't believe you're going to be immune to it when it comes back.
They don't know, though, right?
It's going to be, well, of course not. This is an experiment in function based upon past experience.
I think we've all kind of wondered, too. Like, I was talking to my doctor, like 2 weeks ago.
And Dr. Zhivago?
Not Dr. Zhivago. Dr. Rosenpenis. Dr. Rosen. And, you know, I said, like, should at some point in the fall or something, will everybody start to get tested just to see if you have had it? He's like, maybe. Nobody really knows yet. You know, I mean, I don't think anybody's quite sure. Boy, he did say, though, get the flu vaccine for sure. Hopefully there's a COVID vaccine. And because I'm not always great about getting the flu vaccine. Sometimes I just don't get it.
You know, offer it at work all the time.
I know. My doctor goes, listen, I'm telling you, in the fall, get the flu vaccine. Don't mess around and get it. And he said, if there's a COVID one, obviously you're going to get that, too. You know, so, all right, I'm listening to the doctor, Yerk. Should I play the one about the money real quick? We got to take a break. All right, I'll play in a little bit. We'll talk to Jim Miller. We'll get some ponies, then I'll play more of that Rob Manfred. And some people want to talk about this. If you want to jump in, 312-332-3776. It's Carmen and Yurko.
Did you miss some Carmen and Yurko? You don't have to miss anything. Podcasts are ready on the ESPN Chicago app.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
All right, I think it's time for some winners, some ponies, every Friday at this time. Jimmy will be back with us probably next Friday night when Odds Couple returns. He's been joining Yurk and me in the afternoon since Odds Couple has been on hiatus. Hopefully Hawthorne gets up and running soon. They've got all their stuff submitted to the state, just waiting on approval. Jim Miller is the galloping gent. That's what we like to call him. He's at Hawthorne Jim, and he's a former Brewers farmhand, if you could believe it, Yurko. But he knows those ponies, and he's going to give us some winners. I feel it this weekend. Jimmy, what's going on?
Yeah, I'll tell you, the information you find out there about past careers and past lives. But as you grow up, you know what the focus has been on racing. I worked in racing actually before baseball and returned to racing after. So it's a beautiful thing.
See, how about that? All right, so we got some action this weekend. Where are we going?
Yeah, you know what? A lot of tracks are coming back online this weekend. We're hopeful that we're really close. But you know what? One track that opens up tomorrow is Churchill Downs.
Ooh, so nice.
Under the Twin Spires, you have an incredible card out at Churchill Downs. A lot of full field. So, guys, I'm going to give you one horse just to watch for the racehorse and then two horses to bet on. But the first horse you really have to tune in just to watch is race number four. It's the Return of Monomoy Girl. This is the two horse in there. This is a horse that was your Breeders' Cup Distaff champion last year. She's won 9 of 11 on her career, nearly $3 million in lifetime earnings, and she's making a return to the racetrack. Now, this is a horse that's been away for some time here. So Monomoy Girl, a horse that hasn't raced since 2018, so you're actually looking back a couple years, but she makes the return to the racetrack, so watch her in race number four. Now, the two horses to bet on are coming up a little bit later on the card, but both of them across the board. So start out in race number nine. The nine horse by the name of Box of Chocolates, 10-1 in the morning line here. This is a horse that comes out of a really tough meet at Oaklawn Park, and Box of Chocolates should be charging at him late. And then in the 10th race, the two horse Portrait. This is another horse that's been running pretty well. This is a horse that has some tactical speed, 4-1. Javier Castellano rides, but I like Portrait in race number 10.
All right, so Churchill tomorrow, the two horses we're going to bet, and we're going to bet both of these across the board, win, place, and show. Race 10, the nine horse. Race 10, the two horse. Sound right?
Yeah, race 9, the nine horse. Race 9, the nine, race 10,
I'm sorry,
the two.
Did I say that? Yeah, race 9, the nine, race 10, the two. I hope I didn't say that wrong. My bad.
That's all right.
All right, and you guys feel like maybe you're getting close then, hopefully in the next couple of weeks, if we're optimistic here?
Yeah, we're real close. And the good thing about it is the plans we've submitted actually fall in line with what a movement to phase three would be. So if that's the case, then we're allowed within phase three, that's fine. We'll be ready to roll when phase three comes along. If we can luck out and we can get started ahead of time, we'll do so too. All the horses are here and ready to roll. So the sooner the better for us, Carm.
All right, Jimmy, we appreciate it, buddy. Thanks. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, you got it, boys. Good luck.
There it is. So Churchill this weekend from Jim Miller. And he said, just tune into C-Race for the two horse. Monomoy Girl? Is that how you say that horse's name?
Monomoy Girl.
Yeah. All right. And then race 9, the 9, race 10, the 2. We'll give it out one more time at Crosstalk, because we always do, in case anybody missed it. Shame on you if you missed it. So here's the question from last night where Rob Manfred, he was on CNN, talking about any dispute between the owners and the players and money and where it might go from here.
What about just the optics of this overall, Commissioner? I mean, you know, 35 million people have lost their jobs in the country. There's a fight that's going on over money at the MLB. How do you handle the optics of this?
Yeah, I think that whenever there's a discussion about economics, publicly, people tend to characterize it as a fight. Me personally, I have great confidence that we'll reach an agreement with the Players Association, both that it's safe to come back to work and work out the economic issues that need to be resolved.
Right. So, and he made that point a couple of times that he does feel like they will close the big divide right now, and that something will get worked out. And once they get the all clear, money's not going to be an issue. They'll figure something out and they'll play. Tom Ricketts said last night with Crane Kenny that they estimate upwards of 70% of their revenue is gate related. Now for the Cubs, it very well could be higher than some teams. I mean, if league average is roughly 35%, maybe because they are the Cubs and they draw extremely well, or a team like the Dodgers with a huge park that draws 3.3 million fans every year and a relatively expensive ticket, maybe for those teams, the gate is a little bit more. 70% seems awfully high, doesn't
yeah,
it, Yerk?
It does, and there's a lot of investment outside the park. So if they're calling game day activities, what happens outside with the hotels, with anything else that they've got going outside, you know, then you could see it creeping in. But this is supposed to be a 365-day venue now. You know, with all the stuff they've got going on, it's supposed to be busy 365 days. They've only got 81 home dates. And the 81 home dates would go into that, you know, what the players certainly care about. That's the revenue that we're talking about. We're not talking about 200 and how many ever additional days, 280 additional days throughout the rest of the year, or 250 additional days, whatever it is.
Is he factoring that into his 70%?
Well, that's what I'm asking.
I mean, that's ridiculous.
Remember how we always say numbers can make you do any types
sure.
of things and make you look at? It's hard for me to believe all the television contracts and everything only account for an X amount of that business. If they're accounting for everything that they've invested in out there as being part of their game day product. But so you see what I'm getting
at?
And
the players will never be able to touch any of that. And
exactly.
Any sort of revenue split. I mean,
exactly. You know, so I mean, that's where you're at. I'm just saying how much is, without looking at the books and without looking at what they're doing, and mm-hmm. you and I aren't getting a look at that.
Well, they'll never show anybody, though.
I'm very skeptical of the 70% number.
I am too. I would take that with a grain of salt.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm doing. I take it with a grain of salt. We appreciate your thoughts. Not really. But we appreciate what you had to say on television. Not really. And we'll go about the business of not believing that number.
Yeah, that's just that seems awfully high. And
yes.
They can twist those numbers to tell any sort of story they want. You know?
As can the players. The players
yes.
can twist, too. So we realize there's twisting and there's a little bit of massaging the numbers, if you will, on both sides of the
one good piece of news that came out of yesterday was that it sounds like they were very close, the Cubs and the Marquee Network, on getting a deal done with NBC Sports Chicago. I mean, that's like the last hurdle, too, once everything does get back. Well, Cub fans...
I mean, with Comcast.
With Comcast, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Excuse
yeah.
me. I'm sorry. I'm thinking the old Comcast SportsNet. With Comcast, the cable provider. Thank you, Merck. Will they get a deal done to put the Marquee Network on Comcast so that all the Comcast subscribers, and that is the majority, right, throughout the Chicagoland area, can watch the games? Crane Kenny said they were close, and he had some optimism that they will get a deal done once they figure out when they can resume play. That was probably a sigh of relief for Cubs fans, I would think, because a lot of people were wondering, how are they going to watch these games?
And it hasn't been an issue. It's been put on the back burner.
Correct.
Yeah. So... we'll see. Time will tell if they get a deal or they don't get a deal. Either way, the product, it's going to be different. The only way you're going to be able to consume the product is going to be on television.
Yes.
At least for the early portion of it all.
Yeah, I mean, can you
imagine? Will announcers like Len Casper and Jim DeShay still be at the park? Will they be
know. I mean, will they?
I think it'd be easy for them just to go up and be in the park and not have an issue. I mean, what members of the press are going to be there?
Probably very few.
You know, and if you are a member of the press and you're there, you don't have to jam your press box. You can spread people out wherever you want.
Oh, yeah. You're right. They'll probably just limit it. You're going to spread it out.
Would this be Zoom calls afterwards for players?
The press may never leave the press box. There might not be, you know, it might be like a Zoom call where they bring a player into the interview room and they do a Zoom thing and the reporters stay upstairs. I could see that happening. Waddle and Sylvie were having the conversation about will these stadiums pump in crowd noise just so that it doesn't sound so awkward?
You know, whatever people want to do to make themselves feel better. You know, the place is empty.
I know.
You know, athletes have played in front of, they practice in front of empty places all the time. you know, the athlete is used to playing in front of nobody.
Ah, boy, if you're and an NFL player, though, man.
They practice in front of no one.
Yeah.
When you practice in the NFL, you're practicing by yourselves. Nobody's out
there.
That's
true.
A handful of members of the press are standing on the sidelines, and that's it.
Still, though, if you played big-time college football, now you're in the NFL, like, you're used to 80,000 people.
But you still practiced in front of no one, Carm.
That's
4 days of the week are in front of nobody. It's great to have the fans there, but what I'm saying is it doesn't affect the player as much as you believe it does.
Well, I think they want maybe just for the ambience for the fans at home. I don't think they're thinking that from the player perspective as much. I think just to kind of make it feel more like a regular broadcast for people watching, consumers watching at home, they might try to pump in crowd noise. I don't know.
Marlins games, do they pump in fake crowd noise for that?
No.
There's no one there.
Rays games?
When the A's were drawing 500 fans, were they pumping in crowd music or crowd noise?
Yeah. But it's a different time, though, now, too. It's a one-off, so maybe. I don't know. We need how many contestants, Merck?
So I've got 12 questions, but I can only do 10. So I guess I can screen two more ones if we get started if you want. Or we can just do 10.
Let's
do 10. All right.
We'll go through 10. Merck's got a little game, and Yurko and I don't know the answers to this, so you can use this as a lifeline.
Love it.
We're going to play for a $50 Bub City gift card. Light them up right now. We've got a nice, fun trivia game for the weekend coming up next. 312-332-3776 to get in.
Listening to Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Follow at Carmen DeFalco and at Yurko64 on Twitter.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Get us out of the house. Just ask your smart speaker to play ESPN Chicago. That's it. Alexa, Google, play ESPN Chicago, and we're here for you, Carmen and Yurko. Quick rundown of the rules here, Merck. We're playing for a $50 Bub City gift card.
Correct.
We got 10 callers. If you get a question right, you go into the hopper. It's as simple as that.
Yep.
One question, that's all you got to answer.
Right, and then they can use you or Yurko for a lifeline.
As a lifeline. They can use this as a lifeline because we don't know the answers to this.
Right. And I thought this game was pretty tough, but then I gave it to Jeff Meller, and he did pretty well, so maybe
starting at the top or am I starting
at the top, Carm? Just
start
work your way down. Yeah.
Okay, Danny in Schaumburg is first. Danny, you're ready for your question.
What's up, boys?
What up, buddy? All right, now this is all MJ related. This is all MJ related, okay?
All MJ related.
People should know that. All MJ related. All
right, MJ.
MJ.
Fun facts or just, you know, interesting stats about MJ, all right?
Here we go.
All right, here we go.
Okay.
The shot was maybe Michael's most iconic moment. However, 4 years after the shot, MJ did it again versus the same team. Which Cav did he hit the game-winning shot over?
We're talking about the 89 shot, right?
No, 4 years later, he beat the Cavs again on another shot. Which player did he hit the shot over?
So you have to figure out the player from 93. Boy, that's
tough. I think I know it, but I think I'm overthinking it. I can use a lifeline.
You can use a lifeline.
Saying, Carm?
Is it Gerald?
Carm, what do you say, kid?
My guess is Gerald Wilkins, but I could be wrong.
That's okay. Because I think Elo would be too easy. Obviously,
I do too, and I don't remember. I think it would say Gerald Wilkins.
Yeah, let's go.
Gerald Wilkins.
Grit, though.
There we go.
All right, one for one.
Good job, Danny. Hold on.
I had that one, Danny.
Hold on, Danny.
Danny won't shut up.
I love Danny. John's in Chicago. John, you ready?
I'm ready. Go ahead.
There you go, Johnny. MJ wore 23-45, and for one game, what other number?
Oh, this is a good one. They mixed up his uniform, remember? Or somebody stole his uniform.
That's right.
Jeez, I don't know if I remember. John, do you remember?
I don't remember.
Yurko, do you remember?
Oh, boy, I have no memory of this.
Okay, I'm going to throw out a number. I think it might be 12.
That's what I think. So let's go with that, because that would have been my guess, John. So go with 12.
There you go.
All right, Johnny. Nice job, buddy. Johnny's a qualifier.
I had 21. Boy.
Someone just took his jersey before the game.
They said somebody stole the jersey. Yeah.
Someone took his jersey. Okay, here we go.
All right, Anthony's in Naperville. Anthony, you ready?
Yes, sir.
All right, here we go, Anthony. Name Michael's first coach in the NBA.
I'm going to screw it up. So, Carm, help me out with this one.
Yurk, what do you think? Stan Albeck, right?
I think it's Stan Albeck, yeah.
Yeah,
I was going to say Stan.
Stan Albeck. There you go. All right, Anthony, hold on, buddy. Yeah. Oh, we're 3 for 3. Mike's in Downers. Mike, you ready?
Yeah, go ahead, guys.
Here's your question.
All right, he picked Michael up from the airport when he arrived in Chicago. Now he's Michael's best friend.
We got this if you need help.
Yeah, I got it, too, if you need it, man.
Oh, God, I heard the interview the other day with him, too. No, yeah. I need help, guys.
Go ahead,
George. George, right?
George Kohler, yep.
Mm-hmm. C, grit.
There you go, Mikey. All right, you're a qualifier.
So
you're good. This is Spencer in Park Forest. Spencer, are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, buddy, here you go.
Beautiful.
What was the most amount of points MJ ever scored in an NBA game?
Oh, in an NBA game.
Yeah.
So in an NBA game.
Not the
playoffs. Can't be playoffs, right?
Well, he can include playoffs you want because it's happened in the regular season.
He eclipsed the 63 against Boston once.
Okay.
You know the number? I believe it's...
I'm going to take a lifeline.
I believe it's Rob Gronkowski's favorite number. I believe it's 69.
Yeah. Okay.
69!
Let's take it.
There you go, Spence. That's wow. it.
So I thought this game was tough, and so far, 5-for-5, right?
You're qualifying, man. Yeah, 69.
That was March 28th, 1990, and a 117-113 win over the Cavs again.
It's also Ronnie Munn's favorite number. Jim in Bourbonnais. Jim, you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, here we go.
All right, MJ scored a playoff-high 63 points against the Celtics. Who was the second leading scorer for the Bulls that day?
Oh, tough question.
Jeez. That's the hardest one.
Yeah, by far.
Jim, do you know?
Man. I do not know. I need some help, boys.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, heavens. Was Oakley on the team back then?
Yeah. But I don't think it would have been Oak. I'm thinking more like, could it have been Corzine or was Sam Vincent on
How about Rod Higgins on that team? No?
I don't think Rod Higgins was on that team, Eric.
All right.
This is the toughest one with Sam.
And it was like second with nine, I'm thinking. You know, it was like a paltry amount of points.
Jim, I don't have a great feeling about this. My best guess would be Dave Corzine, but I don't feel great about that, Jim. If you want to do something different, I don't blame you.
I'm going to go Charles Oakley.
All right, Charles Oakley is the guess. Jimmy's, who is it?
Orlando Woolridge.
Oh, Orlando Woolridge. Damn it.
Who would have known?
Jimmy, sorry, buddy.
Oh, the big
O. I feel bad. That's the first one we couldn't get.
God,
I bet
Woolridge.
You Sylvie's probably waiting on hold for Crosstalk and he knew that.
Yeah.
00, Orlando Woolridge. Brian's in Crown Point. Brian, you ready?
I'm upset.
Brian, you ready?
Ready.
Okay, here we go.
All right, what other NBA team retired Michael Jordan's number?
We got this if you need help, Brian.
We were there at the stadium.
Yeah, I'll take some help.
Say Pat Riley's Miami Heat.
Miami Heat.
The Miami Heat.
I'll go Pat Riley's Miami Heat.
See, grit.
There you go, Brian.
We sat and we noticed that after Brian Windhorst climbed those stairs with a Sherpa.
Well, I know that, yeah.
But... Yeah, he came over and we looked up there. Oh, boy, he needed one after that. Thank heavens that Sherpa had an oxygen mask and a tank with him.
He had Tenzing Norgay with him.
Oh, but either way, yeah, we noticed it up on the wall. We're like, what the H is going on? Does every NBA team, did they do that?
No, he did it. Pat Riley does it out of reverence. And we know Pat Riley doesn't own the Heat, but Pat Riley's the one who did that out of reverence.
What's the other non-Miami Heat jersey hanging from the ceiling there?
Dan Marino's. Yeah. 13, yes.
Dante Marino.
Yep.
But it's okay if Tua gets the number, guys. Don't worry about it. Yeah. Just give it to him.
Ricky on the north side. Ricky, you ready?
I'm ready, fellas.
Here's your question, buddy.
All right. Michael was taken third in the 1984 draft. Who did the Bulls take with the 11th pick in the 1985 draft?
I think I know if you need help, Ricky.
85 draft?
I have no idea. I'm going to go with, Carm, help me out.
I think it was Brad Sellers.
Brad Sellers sounds like it's right.
Brad Sellers?
Keith Lee.
Damn it.
Thanks
out of Memphis.
Lot.
Ricky, I'm sorry, pal.
Oh, boy, Carm. You should have just kept your mouth shut. God.
I missed
two. That's the second time you've disappointed
Ricky,
our listeners.
Sorry. Ricky's like, thanks a lot, guys. I'm sorry,
Keith
Ricky.
Keith Lee. Boy, could have had a Karl Malone two picks later, guys.
Tim's in Palatine. Tim, you ready?
Yes.
All right, Timmy, here's your question.
Timmy, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but this is, in my opinion, the toughest question of the 10. So good luck. 1988, right. Michael beat Dominique Wilkins in the classic slam dunk contest. 1987, Michael also won the slam dunk contest. Who was the runner-up?
Jeez, that's tough.
Oh, good Lord.
that's
think
tough.
About it now.
Timmy, I mean, 87, who you think? I mean, could it have been Spud Webb? I mean,
could have been anyone, guys.
could it have been?
That was my first guess, was Spud Webb.
Spud Webb, you want to go with that?
Yeah.
All right, Spud Webb. Damn, man, Timmy, I'm sorry. Who is it?
Jerome Kersey.
Oh, God.
Jerome Kersey?
Come on.
Who the hell cares about Jerome Kersey?
Kersey finished second in the dunk contest.
That's not Michael Jordan trivia. That's Jerome Kersey trivia.
It is. He's right. That's Jerome Kersey trivia.
I mean, what are we talking about? Who finished second to Michael Jordan in 88? Jerome Kersey. That's not 87. Jordan trivia.
Last one. Timmy, sorry. Oh. Last one. Justin and Crestwood. All right, Justin, here's your question.
Name the five opposing coaches Michael beat in the finals.
Well, we can do this.
Oh, that's easy.
I'll go with Pat Riley.
Whoa, hold on. In the finals.
Finals.
So start with Dunleavy.
George Karl,
yep. Rick Adelman.
Jazz coach.
His number's retired at the United Center.
Jerry Sloan.
And then who was the coach of the Suns? If you need help, we can help you.
I'm going to need help with that one.
Paul Westfall.
C.
Boom. Yeah, there you go. Justin, right. You're a qualifier,
so
buddy.
So we got seven qualifiers here.
All right, we'll pick a winning name when we come back to kick off Crosstalk. We got seven qualifiers. You got a 1 in 7 chance of winning that great $50 gift card to Bub City. Sorry to the three guys that we couldn't help. Still, 70%. That's a C. That's not nothing to write home about, I guess, but we did okay, Yurko.
Javon Kersey?
Oh, my God. Jerome Kersey.
The freak?
Not Javon Kersey. We'll Crosstalk next. We're back in 2 minutes.